Welcome, everybody, to part two of the career part of legal profession sessions. A couple of announcements before we start. I know some of you were here last week, and there was some confusion with this class and when it was and whether it was required. The information that we gave out last week was pretty essential information. In fact, it delayed us by a week sending out your logins to our software Simplicity because we were afraid that the people that weren't here would just delete them and then you wouldn't know who had the login information. So those of you who weren't here last week will have gotten a link to the recording of this program from Dean Gargano's office, as well as a short Cali quiz. Cali, have you guys all know what Cali is? Anybody not know what Cali is? Okay, when you first got here, you were emailed a login authorization code to sign up for Cali, which is Computer Assisted Legal Instruction. And you'll use it again in classes, so you should probably just get your account set up. The link that you got to that quiz on the very front page of the intro has that code in it. So it should be very user-friendly to just go. It's a 10-question quiz that just tests on what we talked about last week because it's really important. It's not because we're trying to mean or give you another obligation, but there are things that we deployed last week that are going to put you behind if you don't get caught up on them really fast. And you're going to miss out on some things, including the fact that Simplicity is the name of the software that you're going to get a password to. And it's really important that you log on and start using that system as soon as possible. And we didn't want you to just not know what it was or think it was spam. So that was all really important information. We also went over some timelines, some deadlines, some of the things that we do that we expect you to be doing, and some of the resources that we point you to. So the links to all of that, the slides, as well as the recording, and the quiz are all in that email. So if you are not here, you should have gotten that. If you have any problems with that, please let us know. From now on, for the rest of the semester, we will have a similar email that goes out with that requirement if you are not here. Some of you have already, you know, for future reference, told Dean Gargano that you're not going to be here. That's fine. We will help you make it up. So just bear in mind. If you were here, you probably didn't get it. You don't have to worry about taking any of the quizzes or listening to them. Okay? Anybody have any questions about that? I know it sounds like we're in fifth grade. I apologize for that. It's just we have to deploy this information. It's really important stuff. It's not just, we're trying to feel important. You really need to know it. So that was already great.
Today, if you were here last week and you want to listen to any part of it again, the class was taped and is on the CSO podcast website, which we talked about last week too. Mm-hmm. And if you were here, you might want to go to Cali anyway, because they have a lot of really interesting resources for first years, for your basic standard classes. Like, if you're having trouble understanding something in torts or crim law, you could go on there and do their lessons through it. So it's an interesting resource for all of that.
Yeah, it actually is a really good site to poke around on. And it could cut some corners for you if you're struggling with something. It's not really just for our stuff, it's legal instruction. So there's a lot of good stuff on there. A lot of good writing support as well, like how to use certain grammar. And there's really, really good things there. My next announcement is Charles Engler here. We owe you a book.
You have if you didn't come last week, you missed the opportunity to win this fabulous book.
We had bingo last week.
Really, six people won books. We were this one short. Maybe we'll give out something else next class.
Yeah, we played bingo last week. Isn't that fun? All right, so Simplicity. So watch the Simplicity. That should be coming out tomorrow. When you get your Simplicity password, go ahead and log in and start poking around in there. You can make appointments with us in there. That's where our job postings are going to be. When we tell you, it's time for the U.S. Attorney to start hiring, or it's time for one of these organizations to post, that's where all those announcements are going to be, where all the job postings are. We don't put them through SIP. We don't put them through email. We don't put them anywhere. They're in Simplicity. That is our job name. So if you want to get in there as soon as you can, it's also the place where, rather than calling up and saying, when are you available? I don't know. You can make appointments, lickety split in there with one of us, which we're going to have you do between now and February. So don't forget the word. Simplicity with a Y. It is the worst made piece of software on earth because it is not simple, but you will be good at it in time. So, The next two sessions, next week, the first, we are off. We actually are off. There is no class on the first. On the 8th, we are going to do resumes and cover letters, and it's not as boring and horrible as it sounds, I promise you. And we do reorient you to how the legal process works. There's sort of a lawyer's way of looking at your information, and it's sort of helpful to reorient yourself. If you have a great resume from before, chances are it's pretty good, but there may be some things you can tweak on it. So we try to turn it into a self-marketing session as much as just formatting and word processing. We really want to start getting you in that mindset of how do I present my information to my employers. On November 15th, we're following it up with the next section of activities that you're going to have to do once you send your resume cover letter out. Hopefully the next piece is going to be interviewing. So we're going to have a whole session on interviewing, not only just generally what we think we should do, but we're going to have a workshop type exercise that will give you some practice. Doing that. So that's the rest of our curriculum for this fall.
There will be a separate curriculum in the spring, yes, which will get more into the nitty gritty of how to have a legal job, how to do your first legal job, how to have an internship. So just wait for that.
This is just getting in there. A couple more announcements. There's a job fair coming up. It's been posted on SIP as well. If we're interested, especially in pro bono public interest organizations, there's an organization called PILT, Public Interest Law Center. It is at NYU, so it is down in New York City. But it's one of the largest and most prestigious job fairs on public interest and government jobs that you can go to as a law student. We do have a bunch of students that go to that. It's not until February. It's just at the very beginning of the semester. But you have to register for it starting in the next couple of weeks if you want.
November 1st.
So just watch for that. I just wanted to bring that to your attention. Even if you don't want to do public interest for the rest of your life, it's a very common thing for first years to do in their first summer. So it is definitely a great place. And it's not just New York City organizations. There are organizations that come from all parts of the country to this event. So if you wanted to really be very efficient in your job search and meet with tons and tons of organizations, it's really something that would be interesting to go to and to plan for. We always have a good handful of students that travel down for it. So take a look at that. So it's really worth it, I think. All right. So, okay.
Welcome, everybody. So how many of you have sat through panels before? Panel discussion.
A little bit turns out to be like wah, 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 right? Maybe I'll work on my homework. Okay, so I just want to help you out a little bit before you get started. How many people here know you want to do some kind of public interest or government work? How about maybe just for the summer, but maybe not forever? Okay.
How many people are totally private sector all the way? Firms, corporations, make a lot of money, take over the world?
Okay. How many people have no idea? Kind of looking at everything. Okay. All right. So all of you have something in this panel that you can listen for, and I'm not just saying that. Every single opportunity that you're going to hear about from this panel and all of these wonderful people's career paths have touched all sorts of pieces of the legal profession. So if you are working for a legal services organization and you are getting to meet with some of their clients and work through some of their problems, the skills that you may pick up, even though these are people who are in a sector of the public that your clientele will never be from again, you're going to get to listen to them. You're going to learn how to get information out of them. You're going to learn how to strategize about what to do next. Those are all things that are transferable to other parts of the legal profession. Not to mention, these guys can back me up or contradict me if you like, but a lot of times a public interest or a government organization is slightly or maybe not so slightly under-resourced. What do I mean by that? Anybody?
Demand for jobs.
Demand for jobs?
They need us.
They need you, right. They have more work than they have people. Or they have more clients and they wish they could service more of them than they would if they had more staff. What does that mean? That means that if you work for them, you will, don't listen to me, cover your ears, panelists, they will have you doing stuff you have no business doing as a student. okay? You're going to do stuff that lawyers do. A lot of times, if you jump right into the private sector and you get a fancy law clerk job with a firm that isn't really getting that much value out of you, but they're paying you for whatever reason, you do a little grunt work, you might do a little research, you do some document review, you might find a little piece of a brief, but they can kind of live without you. Not to say it's a bad experience, there's all sorts of reasons to do that, but if you are in the trenches in government and public interest, you are doing what lawyers do on day. Okay. So it's a great place to start to figure out what it feels like to be an attorney, what it feels like to pick up the phone and say, I represent so-and-so in that case, and this is what I would like to happen. And it's a great way to just get your chops. Stand up and talk in court. If you can get a practice lawyer, write something that's going to go into a document that's going to change somebody's life. Make a phone call to someone that's been harassing a client and they haven't been able to get anywhere with them. These are all things that, you know, within a year, you're going to start feeling what that thing you wanted to do that you came to law school to do. So,
that was my plug for you guys. Whatever it is that you want to do in the future, I want you to listen with an open mind and don't just sit there going, I don't want to do any of these things, so I'm just going to date you. Think about even just what it's like, what these people are talking about, how their career paths went, the kinds of things they do all day, what they love about their jobs, what's challenging, and it's really going to help you steer the boat one way or the other. So, that's it. Thank you, everybody. Many of these people are from our pro bono tabling from earlier in the day. If you were, I know you're all thinking very lofty intellectual thoughts, but if you didn't notice, there are lots of tables out in the hallway today. It's pro bono week. It's National Pro Bono Week, so we have invited our guests up here to be with us. If you didn't get a chance today because your schedule was really tight or you have things to do, there will be more tables tomorrow. I highly encourage you to stop and have longer conversations with the tabling organizations because they can really tell you, you know, directly what they do and whether they have time and, you know, if they can use some volunteers, and a lot of people even line up summer gigs or part-time opportunities right away. So if this is something that's been weighing on your mind, this will make you feel like you've made some steps in the right direction. So our panelists, as you can see where they're from, and this list, by the way, of their names, if you wanted to go back to it later, was posted on SIP, so you should be able to access it again. We have Lauren Nash. She's an assistant district attorney at Erie County.
Hi, everyone.
She's our government representative. We have Shelby Maricelli, who is from Volunteer Lawyers Project in the Family Law and Unemployment section. We have Diana Prosky, who is at the Neighborhood Legal Services Homeless Task Force. We have Matthew Parra, is that what you say?
Yes.
At Consumer Debt Clinic, Western New York Law Center, and his compatriots who are sitting up there. And then we have Kelly at the Legal Services for the Elderly, Disabled, and Disadvantaged of New York. We say Legal Services for the Elderly for short, Healthcare Advocacy Unit. And we were also going to welcome Christine McClellan, who's the president of the Buffalo Public Interest Law Program, to talk to you also about funding, and Dean Saran, who is going to talk to you about pro bono and externships. So it's all up. So, any questions before we launch into our panel? This is your future, guys. All right. So, Lauren, I thought we could just go down the row and tell us a little bit, each of you, about your agency or your organization and what its general mission is. The prosecutor.
So my name is Lauren Nash, and I am the chief of the Asset Forfeiture Bureau at the Erie County District Attorney's Office. Like me, I went to UVA, graduated about 11 years ago, and I've been at the DA's office for over 10 years. What I do is I seize money, cars, real property that are used in crimes. Either it's the proceeds of the crime, the instrumentality of the crime, or you can connect the crimes, the money or the drugs or the property somehow to the crime. I do that both through the criminal procedure law or the civil procedure law. So I kind of do the best of both worlds. I appear both in Supreme Court, handling civil summary judgment and default judgment motions, and then I also appear in criminal court doing forfeiture motions. I also do vehicular homicide cases, so I know a lot about
accident reconstruction and going to crime scenes and looking for all things from the beginning of the investigation. So I take that from the time the crime happens when I get the phone call in the middle of the night to the jury trial that happens. And it's been a long process to get where I've been. I've been through a couple of different bureaus in the office, but it's been a wonderful, wonderful experience. The DA's office is a great place to work. You make really great friends, and you learn stuff that you never thought that you would learn or know about sitting in these seats. I know things about meth labs and narcotics cases and homicides that you don't pick up here in the classroom, which I think is a great way for you guys to learn if you do an internship at the DA's office. Our internship, we start taking applications in January. We ask you to provide a resume, a cover letter, and a writing sample. And then the interview process takes place. We're looking for people who want to be prosecutors, have an interest in doing trial work. And that internship is about 8 weeks. It's from June to mid-August. And you don't get to do stuff in the courtroom. We don't let people do that because our cases are somewhat secretive or investigative. But we do let you go to court. You get to observe jury trials, hearings, court proceedings. You get to go to the crime analysis lab. There's a lot of different programs that we put on with the U.S. Attorney's Office. It is a very, very interesting way to gain knowledge about this is something that you want to do. So it's about an 8-week program. If you are interested, Dawn has my email and Amy Goldstein's email, and you can send us your resumes, and we look forward to hearing from you in January. Does anybody have any questions about the DA's office, about criminal law, about how it's different from what you guys learned here? I think what I do is more of a hands-on process than what I learned in law school. We do a lot of stuff in court. It's more of a social thing than a book thing. Anybody else have any questions? No?
I just came from criminal law.
Okay. I never thought that's what I was going to do when I sat in criminal law class, was going to the DA's office. Yes?
Can you just elaborate more on the daily tasks of the internship?
Okay. So, as you rise up in the DA's office, your daily tasks are completely different. You start off in Buffalo City Court, where you handle all the arraignments that come in the middle of the night or during the day. So you're arraigning people on misdemeanor charges, violations, felonies, and then you're investigating them, but only a small part. And then once the felonies get held after a felony hearing, the case goes to a Superior Court across the street where ADAs and a Felony Trial Bureau investigate those cases and do hearings on them, put them to grand jury, do a hearing, and then do a jury trial. And then there are specified bureaus. So there's a sex offense bureau, a homicide bureau, a particular crimes bureau, a special investigation bureau, which handles political corruption, your big investigations involving money laundering, tax, like schemes to defraud. And there's a tactical prosecution bureau that handles all the gun cases in a certain area of the city of Buffalo. So we do all different things. In my daily life, I do a lot of investigation stuff where the crimes happen, but no one's been charged yet. So we're doing DNA. We're doing search warrants. We're applying for search warrants for vehicles, for hospital blood, for cell phones, Facebook. You name it, your social website, we're doing search warrants for it. And then when we compile all of our investigation after we've interviewed witnesses, looked at all the evidence, then we decide to charge the case. So I'm working with the police agency from the time the case starts, from the time the crime starts. The police agency and I get together, we decide what to charge, and then we bring that person in, you know, arrest them, and then we start the process. I'll go to the arraignment. I will go all over Erie County to do an arraignment.
I'm actually leaving here to go to the town of Sardinia
after this to do an arraignment. Once the person gets arraigned, my clock starts ticking. You guys all learned about that speedy clock that starts. So I'm thinking about putting the case in the grand jury. That takes about 45 days. The person's in custody. If not, I try to do it within 4 months. And that's a secret proceeding. There's no defense attorney. There's no defendant. We are in a secure location in Supreme Court. I present witnesses to the grand jury, and the grand jury votes to whether to indict the case or not. If the case gets indicted, then after that, the defendant gets arraigned formally in the Superior Court, and then we start the process of doing motions. Hearings. What kind of hearings are we going to have? Are we going to have a hearing regarding the defendant's statements? Are we going to have a hearing challenging the suppression of the evidence? Are we going to have a hearing regarding the identification? So I'm always thinking about what's the next thing I have to do. And then after the hearing, there's usually a jury trial. Anybody have any questions?
How many interns do you guys usually take over the summer?
So we take about 10 interns. It's kind of hard for us because we are so busy, but the interns usually get assigned to an ADA, and that intern usually follows the ADA during the day. They get to go to court. We usually have a lot of jury trials over the summer, so you get to see a lot of that and jury selection, you know, to the verdict being given out.
There's a particular interest in the Bureau, just an interest, right?
Yeah, if you have a particular interest in doing domestic violence or, you know, special investigations, homicide cases, sex cases, you can tell us, Amy Goldstein and I, what your special interest is, and we try to match you up with that ADA. So there's definitely, you know, if you're interested in domestic violence, you get to see a lot in the office. I know that they take you around, and there's a lot going on in that unit. You have a question?
Yes, do you have previous experience or related previous experience?
Did I have any previous
experience? No, to the candidates for internship.
No, you take whoever wants to be a prosecutor later on, like after you graduate from law school, and you know, we base your experience on your common sense, what you bring to the table, you know, what you did before you went to law school, what your interests are. So it's open to all candidates, but if you do favor people who want to be prosecutors later on in life. Even if you don't want to be a prosecutor and you just have an interest in trying cases and being in a courtroom, I suggest that you apply for the internship. I never thought that I was going to be doing what I'm doing now. When I was sitting in your seats, I ended up there randomly, and I have never looked back. It's been a great experience. I love, love what I do.
What was the deadline for applying?
So we start taking applications in January, and we'll start interviewing people, and then we take about 10 people. So there is no deadline. Okay. Back there, sir?
Did you say you had a connection with the AUSA?
So I work at the DA's office. We do programs with the U.S. Attorney's office with the interns. I think every Wednesday we meet with the U.S. Attorney's office during the 8 weeks of the internship program, and we have a special guest speaker. So you'll meet with, I think, federal judges 1 week. We do something where we take you to the Crime Analysis Center in Erie County, and that is where the lab is, and they test drugs, DNA, guns. I can't remember what else we do, but there's a program each week. Anybody else?
Thank you
so much.
Stay till about 4:30 until I have to get on the road. Okay,
thank you so much.
Thank you.
Don't
you
have enough?
You don't have to stand up.
Thank you. I'm Chelsea Marcelli. I am the Family Court Staff Attorney over at the Volunteer Lawyers Project. What I do at BLP is I take family court cases. role at BLP is that I am supervisor of the Family Court Help Desk program. I don't know if anyone's really heard of it before. There's a practicum here at DB where I get a lot of my interns from. That program is a walk-in legal clinic that's open 4 days a week at Erie County Family Court. And it's just a way to give people legal advice and they're just trying to kind of get their bearings in regards to what's happening in the court process. We have a similar program in federal court as well, so you get family court or federal court experience depending on where your interests lie. And so I take cases and I run that program as well, and I've had some really great experience in regards to getting knowledge about legal issues and issues that we are all looking for interest for those programs. BLP in general is a program that has a wide range of legal issues that we deal with. We have a very expansive immigration program going on right now. We also have an attorney that handles unemployment insurance benefit cases. We have a program called Attorney of the Morning, which partners with Neighborhood Legal Services, helps provide eviction defense for people who are about to lose their apartments or their homes. We do a large range of anything really civil related. We do sometimes have large range of divorce cases, bankruptcy, tax issues as well. We have a attorney that's really devoted solely to tax issues. We are always looking for student interns.
What kinds of qualifications or what do the people in senior students?
For student interns, we're really looking for people who can give their time in regards to coming in or helping us. Sometimes we help with writing appeals for unemployment insurance briefs. We're coming in and working with clients, helping with intake, doing those types of things. We really can help you in terms of building even the basic things like interview skills for clients. Through our limited scope programs at the help desk or training the morning, we have our student interns, they go through eligibility, our financial eligibility tool. Also, issue spot with our clients and actually interview them and get an idea about what the legal issues are. So it's a really good way to kind of figure out how to speak to the client and ask questions in regards to getting the information that's needed for the attorney to know how to assist that person. So we are looking for people to give their time and help out with those two issues. We're also happy to help to take people to court and help them serve with that aspect as well. So really just people who are willing to give their time and work with us and help
us. If people are interested, what should they do?
People interested in volunteering should reach out to either myself or Gail Murphy. She's our global coordinator over at BLP. I know that she was here today's gambling, so I'm sure some of you were able to speak to her. If not, people from our office will be back tomorrow, but her information is available on our website. It's ecbablp.com, and that has her phone information as well as her email address. So if they're easy to look up and that we can shoot her an email and she'll happily work away for you to volunteer. We take students really at any time, so we take people any time of the year really. We have externship programs, you can get course credit through. We also have a program through a practicum, so you get more intensive experience. I know that 16 was a former practicum student of mine. We also take summer students and winter break students as well. So really any time we're happy to help accommodate student schedules to get them to volunteer. Okay. Anyone have any questions or anything?
We can always circle back to the panel as well if you want to, if you think of something as we go through.
Thank you, Michelle.
Hi, I'm Diane Crosby. I'm an attorney at Neighborhood Legal Services. I work in the public benefits unit. We're divided into several substantive legal units. We have a disability unit where they handle disability issues. They have like a subunit that does SSI appeals for people who have been denied SSI who are disabled. We have a work incentive hotline. That's actually a statewide program to assist people who receive disability benefits but want to get back into the workforce part-time. So what they do is they advise people on how much they can work, how much they can earn, and maintain their benefits. Because when you get disability benefits, often your health insurance and potentially your food stamps or what's now called SNAP benefits are tied to that disability payment. So if you lose that, your right to that disability payment because you're working too much, then you may lose your health insurance and all sorts of other problems that arise. So they provide advisement for that for people across the state. We have a housing law unit. They do eviction defense, so they're over at city court 2 days a week, and usually with at least one student, if not more, to basically help people on the fly who are showing up for housing court because their landlord served them with eviction papers. They also take conditions cases. We have a lot of housing stock problems in this area. We have a lot of older homes. We get a lot of cases where people are complaining that they have, you know, rodent infestations, bed bugs, leaking pipes. The gas company won't turn the gas back on because there's something wrong with the furnace that the landlord won't fix, you name it. Problems with the apartment that aren't being repaired. They can't find their landlord sometimes to get things fixed or even pay the rent. So they help with that. They also do fair housing claims, so housing discrimination issues. Source of income, LGBT, you know, whatever it is, families, whatever the problem is that is resulting in someone being illegally denied an apartment and being discriminated against. They hire a lot of students. The public benefits unit sort of hires students. It just sort of depends on our needs and what we have. Shelby was actually one of my students years ago. I don't remember when. Something like that. So the family law unit is starting to use more students now. We hired a bunch of new attorneys. So they're doing basically anything that assigned counsel isn't going to be able to handle. There's assigned counsel program for family court as well as for criminal court. So they will handle some custody matters. We get a lot of our cases through the Family Justice Center where they are providing services to survivors of domestic violence. And I think we're starting to also do a little bit of child support, which is nice because often low-income people are having a lot of trouble getting ahead because they have these old child support payments that they were never able to afford to pay, frankly, or that built up while they were missing for whatever reason, not working, you know, ill, in jail, whatever the case may be. Those support arrears continue to accrue. Now they owe a lot of money and their wages are being garnished and they can't live because all of their wages are being garnished. So we're starting to do some support issues where we can help people at least lower those payments that they're making. Hopefully do things like keep your driver's license because you can get your driver's license revoked if you don't pay your child support, and then that makes it hard to work. Things like that. And then in the public benefits unit, so we have several projects. Primarily we help people who are having problems with the Department of Social Services. So when people are trying to get any of the variety of benefits you can get from social services, whether it's for an emergency situation or ongoing benefits or Medicaid or food stamps, any problems like that, it turns out when you apply for benefits or receive benefits, you have rights. You have due process rights, you have rights to a hearing, and so that's what we do. Most of what I do involves emergencies, so people who literally have no place to sleep tonight come into my office, say, I went to the Department of Social Services, they won't give me a shelter placement, and then we start looking into their situation and trying to figure out why social services isn't helping them and what we can do to get social services to do to place them, because it's pretty unlikely that people are just not eligible for a shelter placement if they are homeless. There are very limited circumstances where the social services department could be like, yeah, we can't help you. Most of the time, if you have no place to sleep, you're probably going to be eligible for shelter. You're not going to be able to pick where. You're not going to be able to, you know, you may have to pay. If you have income, you'll have to pay some of it, but they should be giving people a place to sleep. So that's most of my job, and then I handle hearings for people who either are having problems while they're in shelter or so maybe they're getting a notice saying we're not going to give you shelter anymore. Or they'll give you a notice saying we're not going to pay. You have to pay a certain amount for your shelter. I just had a hearing like that where someone was being told she had to pay something like $900 a month for the cost of her shelter, but the notice was defective. So we raised a due process argument, and they said, no, if the notice is absolutely void, it cannot be imposed. You have to give her money back. So that's basically what I do. I handle mostly administrative law matters, which I like because it's less formal. It's easier to work things out. But because of the way the law is structured regarding benefits, basically by working things out, I mean my clients get what I'm asking for them to get. Like they don't have anything to give the social services, so it's not, I'll give you this if you give me that. It's just law. You have to give them the benefits, and this is law. For our students, we use our students very much as a front line, interviewing clients, doing intake, trying to figure out what their problems are, requesting documentation, obviously I oversee everything they do because they're not attorneys, they're students. But it's, you know, they're your clients, they call you. I basically don't even necessarily see too many of the clients unless we reach a point where we need to go to a fair hearing. And then I usually handle the hearings. They used to have, was it a practicum that Lindy taught?
Mm-hmm.
Where they would get cases from our office and students would represent people in public benefits hearings. We also are handling a lot more overpayment and what's called intentional program violation. And that is it's an administrative hearing where basically the Department of Social Services is alleging that somebody committed fraud and obtained benefits they weren't entitled to, and there are much longer sanction periods for those. So you may not be able to get benefits for a year or even longer if, you know, the judge rules against you in the fraud hearing, but, you know, there are always problems with that case, and so if we can, we try to help people with those too, because they're pretty serious and they often can result in some rather large overpayments and penalties and lack of access to income for a lot of people. We work fairly closely within our office between the units. Family law, to some extent, they'll have cases where they need our help because there's a public benefits issue as well, because frankly, poor people have way more legal problems than most of us do. And also housing, because there are emergency benefits that people can get to help them maintain and prevent their housing and prevent evictions. So I will often have overlapping cases with our housing unit where they're trying to either figure out whether we can get someone the help they need to stay in their apartment, or figure out what they're going to be eligible for going forward if they have to leave, because housing has gotten very, very, very expensive to rent in Buffalo, and we're seeing a lot of people who maybe 5 years ago, if they were being threatened with eviction, they could just move into another apartment. They could find something new within a couple weeks. It was no big deal. Now I'm seeing upwards of people sitting in shelters for 4 and 5 months, because when you're a single person on public assistance, you get about $350 a month plus food stamps. Try finding an apartment for that. You're not going to find one. So people are remaining, even families are remaining homeless for very long periods of time. So that's what we do. For contact information, Christine McMenamin is the point person. Is she up there? Because I do not have a spell last name.
Yeah.
I don't remember.
Yes, she is.
Okay, so you want to contact her, and then you can just specify what area you're interested in, disability, family, public benefits, or housing. And just let her know when you would be interested. We're pretty flexible. They have paid students. We get people fellows. We get volunteers. We get people through externships. We used to get clinics. Students, so there are all sorts of different ways you can work in our office. But you definitely will be busy. There's sort of especially housing and benefits, there tends to be a constant stream of emergencies coming into the office. So usually we're looking for people who can sort of stop what they're doing and just run out and try to deal with the emergency and then come back to whatever other case you were working on later. Calm people down. Interview skills and communication skills are very important. Most of our clients are not great communicators. They tend to have multiple disabilities, substance abuse conditions, a lot of cognitive disorders. So, you know, sort of figuring out how to get information out of your clients, it can be hard. But once you learn to ask the right questions and sort of figure out how the system works, it's really, I find it to be very rewarding.
It was definitely really interesting. I enjoyed it. It was a good way to kind of figure out all the collateral issues that low-income people really have. It's more than just a mental issue. It's six different things. So even understanding different areas of the law and knowing where to direct someone can really go a long way in helping your client with all the various issues that they're having.
Does anyone have any questions? I can't stay after, but I can stay for like another 20 minutes.
Before we move on, where's the sign-in sheet? Anybody have it? Has everybody gotten it? Is there a section of the room that needs it? Can you pass it this way, please? Thank you. Matthew? Oh, you do? Fantastic.
You should be able to. The sign-in. test. Hopefully people will. Oh, fantastic. All right.
I'm Matthew Parham. I'm from the Western New York Law Center. Like
other people you've heard from, we're a nonprofit legal services organization here in Buffalo.
And we provide legal services to mostly poor people. The organization's been around since like the 80s, and I was a little kid back then, so I don't have personal knowledge of this. But from what I understand, our orienting philosophy is that we are geared towards helping poor people pursue economic justice. So that changes what it means over time. And these days,
we have this program called Claro. Hey, there's a remote. This is a fantastic law school. You have all the technology. So
most of the attorneys in our office do foreclosure prevention right now because HUMED heard there was a housing crisis, a little economic collapse that happened in this country a little while back and really hit people's houses quite a bit.
So here's like a list of our organization's practice areas. So foreclosure prevention is a big thing that we do now, and we have a bankruptcy program that sometimes can help people save their houses or their income. I say public benefits, so we don't do, unlike what you just heard from Diana from the Neighborhood Legal Services, we don't do individual hearings about public benefits, but we do some impact litigation, and that has addressed public benefits. So we do class actions against the county and, well, various counties.
And the reason they do that is that I work for what's called a restrictive program. We are prohibited at the Neighborhood Legal from filing class actions. So if there's a problem, it tends to go to the Western New York Law Center for the class action, and then we handle individual cases.
So this is one of those topics that to a first-year law student audience would make your eyes glaze over. I went into it. But back in the 70s, anyway, the feds decided that they weren't going to give you money if you were going to sue them. That's the short version. Okay, we're going to sue them, so we don't get their money. They're not going to sue them, so they get their money. So if they want them sued, we got to under the table talk to each other and decide we're going to sue them. And we sue other government agencies too who don't fund us. But so that's, anyway, we're allowed to do class actions. We do class actions. I just settled a class action the other day. It was great. Not about public benefits, but that's one of the things we do is impact litigation. And if we identify systemic issues that we can attack through litigation, or actually lobbying, another thing they're not allowed to do is lobby. That we can do to attack systemic issues that are keeping people from pursuing economic justice. All right, and we have a small business clinic that Steve Salcedo, who walked out because he got sick of waiting for me to talk, I guess, but who was here earlier, tabling, is starting to help people in Buffalo want to form small businesses, help them out with their getting that off the ground. But what I do is this thing, which there's this acronym Claro that's all over this thing that's completely meaningless, but it sounds good, right? So we came up with it as a name for our program. Actually, I didn't come up with it. Someone in Brooklyn came up with it before I was even a lawyer. But what we do, and this is mostly what I do and mostly what law students can do for us to get some experience and help some people out who need it, is help out at these walk-in self-help clinics that we run. So we run these walk-in self-help legal clinics. We're one of seven counties in New York that has these, and what we do is we help people, ordinary people who walk in off the street who have issues with debt or credit. Mostly we help people who have been sued about things allegedly having to do with debt or credit, because we're lawyers, so we're good at helping people who have been sued. So what we do is we have a clinic session at City Court on Fridays and out in the community at a neighborhood center. It's actually like a tax preparation center most of the time. On Tuesday evenings, which is where I'm headed right after this. And if someone, say, here's a common scenario, okay, someone isn't making very much money, but they have a job and they're barely making ends meet with whatever they're earning there, and then all of a sudden they know that their paycheck is a little short in 1 week, and they look at it and it has some abbreviation and they don't know what the heck it means, but they go inquire and find out that actually someone sued them 3 years ago and had a judgment against them for some debt from some company they've never heard of, and they're wondering why their money is now being taken and sent to the sheriff so he can send it to this company. Very common scenario. So they come to us and they bring the papers and we look at it and we figure out this company you've never heard of sued you and they say you're this person, you have this account. I say, no, I didn't. And maybe that's true, maybe it's not. But usually we get that judgment vacated because of just the lack of notice. Because if that person didn't know they had been sued, then they weren't served. And if they weren't served, there shouldn't be a judgment against them. And we do that 20 times a month. We get that exact scenario. and then that person now can afford to pay their bills again. So we help people out in that type of scenario. He was a law student, said, oh, I'm invited to come do that and have the pleasure of knowing you helped that person pay their rent by getting rid of that judgment. So that's the kind of thing that we do at that clinic. Judgments, you know, a lot of people are getting sued by companies they've never heard of lately because there's sort of an epidemic of what are called debt buyers. Who here is from Buffalo? All right, you're from like the global capital of the debt buyers. So there's a lot of companies out there that the last 10 years or so, their purpose in life is to buy debts from other companies that sell debts, and those companies eventually supposedly get them from the companies that actually lend money. However, anyone ever heard of a book called Bad Paper? Oh, it's a great book. Everyone should. Oh, we actually have a winner. All right, it's a great book. People are, you know, strapped with their handguns and their shoulder holsters into the back of cars, and like, you know, doing little deals with spreadsheets on thumb drives with all sorts of debts on them that are stolen from somebody. So anyway, a lot of people are getting sued for debts that they don't actually owe, and we help those people out. So that's what we do. This is why we do it. Okay. Believe it or not, that situation I just described, that's like 75% of what the courts do. Actually, this case is sort of like that. The judges might not know it because they're little default judgments because people weren't served, so the judges don't actually see those cases. But the sheriff sees them when they take people's money. And we see them and we help undo that. So it's an exciting area of practice. I invite everyone to come and experience it at least once, because you'll see all sorts of crazy stuff happening, like dead people signing affidavits. There's the, you know, alligator eating the papers that the process server threw in the sewer. Hence the term sewer service. But that process server went and signed an affidavit where he said he handed it to somebody. And that was a problem. So that happens. And banks selling accounts they have no information about, the companies that have been going to sue people without evidence and get judgments against them and take their money. People map this out. Okay, folks in Buffalo are especially affected, and folks in poor neighborhoods are especially affected by the epidemic of default judgments. And we are on the front lines of attacking that epidemic. So what specifically can law students do if they come volunteer at our sessions? Well, you can look at stuff like this, help someone write that thing, and then if you don't do that, and this happens, you don't want that, because that means the sheriff can take your money. You know, forcible collection, that's what I'm talking about. It also affects people's credit, and they get liens on their houses and stuff. So you don't want that. And so I didn't have a good graphic for this. Next time I'll have one, I swear. But we help people make motions to vacate, which the law says if you weren't actually handed the papers or they weren't actually... I'm simplifying. People taken your practice yet?
No.
So you won't know that I'm actually simplifying, so that's good. That's not smarter than I actually am being. But if you weren't actually delivered the papers in an appropriate manner, and the court did not actually have the jurisdiction over you to tell the sheriff you can take your money, and so you can undo those judgments, and we do all the time. And here's the times and places where we are, all right? Basically, so the process for Claro, law students can come to the sessions and meet with people. We have you shadow an attorney the first time you come so that you're not just thrown into a not knowing what you're going to do and untrained and whatnot. And you can shadow an attorney as many sessions as you want if you feel comfortable once you've done that at least once. We'll sit you down with one of the visitors that come in on your own. We'll meet with them, figure out what their problem is, consult with the expert attorney there, and you can actually draft the papers, whatever they need to be, if it's an answer, or we have various form letters that we help people fill out, or motion papers to either vacate a judgment or dismiss a case because it's beyond the statute of limitations or whatever it may be. And we have a student practice order, so if you work on a motion and you want to argue it, then we can work that out. That's something that can happen. And get some actual experience, not just sitting down with people and interviewing them and figuring out what their problem is and troubleshooting it and developing an approach and drafting the papers and getting them ready to file in court. You actually get up in court in front of a judge and meet the judge and argue the motion and get the relief for the person and then feel great about the fact that you just helped somebody get a lien off their house or whatever it is you did. So any questions about that? All right, well, I'm going to be around for a little while longer if there happen to arise questions. And should I leave this up here? Because I think this is really useful.
Yeah, sure. Thank you.
Hi, everyone. My name is Kelly Garrett. I'm a staff attorney for Legal Services. you, and you should stay tuned for this Thursday because we are announcing publicly our name change. if anyone's interested in the work they do, if you're a good way to deal, we are having hosting a public event at the Big Brewery on Thursday. There'll be some free beverages and food, and you can come and learn about all of the new updates and changes to our organization that are going to be happening. We just are keys, so I can have you send out that info at time. But I'm a staff attorney in the healthcare advocacy unit. There are several units in LCD. There is between one and two attorneys in each unit and one to two paralegals assigned to each unit as well. In the healthcare advocacy unit, I deal with Medicaid, Medicare, private health insurance, grievances, and appeals. I also am a lobbyist, which is pretty cool, I think. I'm part of a lot of different coalitions that advocate for beneficiary healthcare rights throughout New York State, so it does involve a little bit of travel. I go to New York City once in a while, and frequently in Albany, about once a month I go to Albany, so that's pretty cool as well. So like many of the people at the table, much of my position involves administrative law, but our organization does all kinds of law throughout a very broad spectrum of areas. So while I'm administrative law, we have people in all of the different courts. We have a housing unit that does works with the foreclosure prevention project, and also does some landlord-tenant law. We have a guardianship unit who we actually serve as guardian for about 120 wards of the state. What happens in those cases is there are individuals who develop dementia or Alzheimer's. They either don't have family or they don't have family willing to take on the burden of becoming their guardian as they get older, so they need somebody to step in. The state ends up appointing somebody to kind of handle their affairs and take over. And so we serve as guardians for, I think it's around 120 individuals right now. So that's an interesting unit. They also take social work students as well, so if anyone's dual degree, we take in a lot of students in that area. We have elder abuse prevention unit who, there are all different types of abuse that they see and that they work on, but one of the primary ones is financial exploitation. So we see a lot of times, unfortunately, powers of attorney or family members or friends financially exploiting elders. They're a vulnerable population. Money gets stolen, houses get sold, some crazy sad stories, but what we can do is we can try to help get the money back and try to remove people as powers of attorney, get orders of protection, do all kinds of things like that. So sometimes it ends up overlapping areas of law, and ends up overlapping with some family court and things like that. We also do consumer protection, so fighting against scams and some debts. One of the most popular ones recently is student debt, because grandparents will co-sign for loans for things, and then people end up defaulting, and so we try to see if there's anything that we can do and assist the elderly population with those kinds of debts. We have family law and kinship care. So that program works to help place individuals, kids, with other family when they're being taken away from their parents. So we keep them out of the foster care system. They attempt to help grandparents or any other family member, really, with those kinds of issues. And probably the same sense. We do have a very broad array of services. We are also work in the Veterans Court. I don't know if anyone's familiar with what the Veterans Court is in Buffalo, but it's basically a special treatment court. We have attorney volunteers go in. That court is every Tuesday, and we kind of do serve as intake and referral agents for any broad array of issues that could come up for the veterans that are part of the Veterans Treatment Court. We have a refugee project. Since Buffalo has one of the highest refugee populations locally, so we help place people with services and provide people services as well to the population. So there's a lot of things that we do. We do provide free civil legal services, so we are funded by federal grants, state grants, private donors, a whole broad spectrum of things. We're constantly taking student volunteers. We pretty much accept applications on a rolling basis. We take people throughout the school year and the summer. There are formal externships, so if you're looking for credit, you can check that out in our course catalogs. It would satisfy, as we're here would, your 50 pro bono hours requirements. You don't have to commit full-time. If it's over the summer, you kind of work with with you, and they will place you in the unit that suits you, depending on what your interests are. If you don't know what your interests are, you tend to get put where there's the most need, but every single unit accepts student volunteers, and it's sort of up to the lawyer in each unit what you end up doing. So, for example, in the summer, I had a really wonderful student intern, and he was so impressive with his work that I let him run an entire district hearing by himself. So it, you know, it does depend, and you have to work hard, but if you prove that, you know, we can trust you with those types of responsibilities, then, you know, we'll give you as much as you can handle. So you do really, as Lisa said earlier, you really do get thrown right into trenches day one at a place like Legal Services for the Elderly and many of these places, because there is that need. I handle my own caseload of anywhere between 70 to 120 cases on average at a time. It ebbs and flows, but that's all just me and my paralegal. And I'm a relatively new attorney. I graduated UB Law last year and got admitted this January. And so I got thrown right into my own caseload. And, you know, so there are pros and cons, and depending on what your interest might be, maybe you want to go into private practice, and that's awesome. Do what is best for you and what suits your interests. But one of the pros to working in a nonprofit, working in public interest, is that you really do get more autonomy very quickly, and you get thrown right in to handle a lot. So if anyone has questions, or, you know, if you're interested in volunteering, I do have some forms with me today that you can come down and fill out. We also will have a new website launching on Thursday. You can apply online anytime. And we do a formal posting through Simplicity for in the springtime for our summer volunteers as well. And the detailed funding, which I know is going to be presented on, does apply for our organization.
Anyone have any questions for any of the other panelists, or any panelists so far? Just a couple of, I just want to moderate a little bit. I've been sort of taking a few notes on some things that probably went over your head, so just don't worry about that. There's a lot of rapid-fire SSI, default judgment agreement, non-parent custody kind of stuff going on. Don't worry about it. Okay, this is one of the reasons. This is how you're going to talk after you come out of one of these internships. So just take in what you can. But just, it sounds really cool, doesn't it? Anybody not think it sounds really cool? So
I just have one question that each of you would sort of take a stab at. If students, say everybody in this room took a job like this in the summer, and then next year they're applying for something else and sitting in an interview, what do you think is sort of, what would they tout from their experience with your organization on their resume or in an interview with a future employer?
I guess how to act in court, how to do research and writing, how to apply your common sense to what you're dealing with. I think that's the most important thing that I've learned from my job, is that common sense goes a long way to what you're doing and how you're dealing with other people. People that you probably have nothing in common with. I deal with all walks of life, and I have to remind myself, put myself in a situation where I'm dealing with them. And just, you know, just social skills. I think that in my job, we learn a lot of social skills and how to deal with other people, which I think is really important when you're practicing law. I know when I was in nurses, I had no concept of what went on in Supreme Court or in County Court. So I invite all of you to come downtown to 25 Delaware, 92 Franklin. You can come whenever you want. It's open to the public, and sit in court and watch something. You learn so much from just observing people, you know, on the record presenting their case. And if you want, I'll give you my phone number. You can call me up, and I'll let you know if there's a jury trial going on in the courtroom if you want to come down and watch it. But I think that you learn a lot just observing other people presenting themselves in the courtroom.
Absolutely. Just to kind of think about that, another way you really learn is by observing how attorneys actually kind of be attorneys in general. So, for example, through the Help Desk program that I run, our students don't just conduct intake. They also sit in and observe the attorney consultations, so they kind of see the different ways attorneys work with clients and communicate with them, give them advice, how they relate to the client, and every attorney is very, 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 very attorneys have heard in terms of their styles of clients and how they manage expectations, how they do the actual lawyering work. And every sound may be just as effective, but they're all very, very different in how they appear to be. I have attorneys who volunteer for my program. We have about 66 different attorneys on our roster right now. I have one attorney who doesn't like it when clients cry, so she'll kind of make them stop if they're crying in front of her. Then I have attorneys who kind of let the clients just let it all out right then and there. So every attorney has different styles, and one way isn't worse than the other, but it kind of helps you figure out what kind of attorney you want to be in terms of how you work with clients and things like that. Our program is also really great in terms of networking and meeting attorneys. You are working every day with usually a different attorney and you're interested in family court and federal court. These are attorneys who have a really wide range of experience in whole in this area. A lot of our federal court programs for our federal court help us. They are attorneys in big firms in Buffalo. Our family court attorneys are attorneys who have been practicing family court for a very long time. We don't take attorneys who just don't really know their business. We take people who really know their stuff because we want to be able to give the best possible service to our clients. And like I said, again, we learn how to interview a client. Really working with a client and managing a caseload are things that a lot of newer attorneys that I see, something I'm still learning, everyone kind of learns to deal with. So it's a way to kind of get yourself an idea about how to manage cases, how to work with a client, how to ask different questions, and how to ask a tough question. It's tough asking a client how much money they need when you really don't know how much of anything. And it's also tough to ask a client something like, well, how do you move from your household? What did you do to start this trial process? So you get to kind of learn how to ask a tough question to get the information out of the client, which is a really fantastic skill to have.
We always have some law student volunteers who pretty much can come in as much or as little as they want to the volunteer clinic. We also have externs who have more of a set schedule. We have two externs this semester from the summer. We have a full-time intern who got some sort of funding. It was not a few built, but it's another thing. To pay for it full-time. And so, obviously, the full-time person got the most experience. But I think the big difference for a summer, because I think that was the question, between going to legal services or, at least as far as I can recall, I was possible anyway, going to a private law firm, is that you get a lot of practical experience. It'll feel much more practical, I think, and tangible than what you get at a private law firm, where you maybe shadow somebody who's doing all the actual work and carrying the bag or whatever, and maybe doing some research or people I knew. I worked with a firm like this after law school, so I've got one of the legal services. We have like document review and that sort of thing, and sort of placement like open windows. I guess I was like a penthouse across the windows, but anyway, it was dark. It's not practical, it's not tangible. Legal services look actually, particularly in our clinic, in our program, you'll sit down with a lot of people and interview them. And work out the problems for them. You'll draft a lot of papers. And then the person that we just had finish a full-time summer internship probably argued 10 motions in Buffalo City Court. And I think she's 10-0, which is like the best start in this had for us. We have someone who's like 9-1, who's been excellent and volunteering for a while. But having that experience of getting up in the court and meeting like okay, 3 or 4 judges and arguing that many motions. And for them, I think when she goes to interviews for her next summer, she'll probably talk about that.
Yeah, I definitely agree. You will get more practical experience than you will at a lot of other places. Client contact is a huge thing. One of the first things I tell my students the first day that they're in is that managing client expectations is one of the most difficult things and something that you have to learn to do very quickly. I deal in healthcare units, so people are sick when they come to see me. I'm never going to see somebody on a good day. And if I lose their appeal, it's going to be a worse day. So, understanding how to deal with that and how to compartmentalize a little bit. So client contact is a big thing and it's important to have early on if you have that opportunity. And also just exposure to a wide range of issues, because even if you're placed in one unit, if you're working in healthcare and OE, for example, if you express an interest in other areas, everyone's open to shadowing. We have an open door policy at our place, which is really nice. It's very collaborative environment. For example, once a week we have a big staff meeting where we can bring case issues to the table and bounce ideas off of each other. So even if you're not in one unit, you're still understanding what other people are working on, what's going on. You know, it's a very collaborative environment, and something that you might not get in a lot of other places. So I would definitely say, you know, the client contact and learning how to deal with all of that. And also, I mean, research, writing, exposure to course, depending on the unit that you're in, and, you know, the amount of dedication and hard work that you actually put in, you could end up running a hearing or speaking in court and doing those kinds of things. So if you earn it, we'll give it to you. So really, it's what you make it.
Great. Any other questions? Anybody think of anything? Okay, one parting shot. What's the best thing about your job, guys? I'm going to start from the side.
I think it's very rewarding. I love what I do. When I was in New York City, just not that long ago, I had no idea what I was going to do. I knew I wanted to do some kind of public interest law. I thought maybe. I had no idea what public interest really meant, so I was kind of winging it. And, you know, over my law school experience, I tried to get as much exposure as possible to a lot of different things. I took advantage of the clinics and different externships and such. But, you know, I learned very quickly that I am inspired by work that I see have an impact. And so I think that that's the best part of my job. And also just the fact that I did get thrown in right away. I manage my own unit. I have my own paralegal. I'm very fortunate to work where I work, and it's very close to me.
I have the best job in the world because I pretty much can do anything I want and I set my own schedule. So it's a little hard to explain. But I would say I used to be in private practice, and I basically work for millionaires, and my job is to preserve their income. And they expect me to work 18 hours a day, and I sit home anytime they call, day or night, and they have no appreciation for it at all. They really want me to do anything. Because they, you know, pretty much just own a $1,500 an hour apartment, do all the interesting work, and I was just so I am much more appreciated now, and I would much rather preserve them for people who don't actually need it.
I'm kind of similar to Kelly. I'm new off the back of this. I graduated in 2015 as well. I was actually an intern for the health ed before and was hired to run it. So I haven't quite really left the program quite yet. But I mean, just in general, you get to kind of be one of the good guys. It's always fun and nice and rewarding. I mean, I have clients where I have a grandparent right now who's, I get to tell her that she gets to keep the grandkid that she's had living with her for the past 7 years and she's not going to leave her. I get to tell her that she gets to keep her, which is always happy news to deliver. I get to tell the guy whose income is being cut in half by child support that he's going to be able to afford rent next month. You can tell them good things and help save their income and preserve it and say that it's not going to all be bad. We can help you make life a little bit more manageable. And it's really, it sounds super cheesy, and I realize that and recognize that, but we get to be the good guys and really kind of fight for justice a little bit, which is always a great way of saying that as chaotic and crazy and overwhelming to be for me, is you get to have these really rewarding moments that make it so.
The best part about my job, I would have to say, is the relationships that I've built over the past 11 years with the other ADAs that I've worked with, and some of them have left, and I'm still really close to them, and they're now defense attorneys. Or the judges that I appear in front of every day, who I've developed a relationship with, or the police officers that I work with on a daily basis, all throughout your county. And what's important to me about that relationship is that when I'm doing my job, I'm not doing it to convict somebody. I'm doing it for justice and to do the right thing. And working with the judges, law enforcement, like for the attorneys in my office, and being able to bounce off ideas about with them, or, you know, what we should do with the case, should we go forward, should we not go forward. I'm able to do that because of the relationships that I've developed with all of these different people. And I'm really proud of those relationships, and I'm grateful that I can trust you know, the police officers that I'm close to, that they'll know that I'll do the right thing. Or the attorneys in my office who are so supportive of me all the time. Or the judges who, you know, I may put something in front of them and I know that they're going to pick up what I'm picking up and they're going to do the right thing. So that's the best thing that I've learned over the past 11 years.
So I'm going to ask those of the panel who don't have to leave anymore, you do, to please stay around if you can until we're done. We're going to wrap up with the other side of the room in a minute. But, you know, these types of jobs, like I said, whether it's for part of your life, the rest of your life, or just the summer, or just for a semester, sometime when you're in law school. I had that one of these jobs in the summer. I was in a clinic as well. I love that feeling of, like, getting out of all my doctrinal classes and showing up at a clinic and picking up the phone. And, like, I felt like I was pretending to be someone's attorney, finally. Actually, I was somebody's attorney, finally. It's a really amazing feeling. So the quicker you can get to that, the more secure in your own career path you're going to be. And no, I guarantee you, no matter what kind of job you take, it will take you in a path, whether it's, no, I don't want to do that anymore, so now I know I have other choices, or it'll push you along in a straighter line. So I highly recommend that you look into these positions. You heard about networking, just getting into a legal community, talking the talk, walking the walk. How do I interact with my colleagues? How do I interact with opposing counsel? What is this lingo that they all use? How am I going to get to learn to talk like that? How do I feel good at the end of the day? How do I make a difference in the world? A lot of the stereotypes, we're going to talk about generational stereotypes next semester, but, you know, you, those of you who are millennials, I know you hate being labeled, but a lot of millennials come to law school or come through their life wanting to make a change and wanting to do good in the world. So this is a really, this is where you do that. So so great jobs, either temporarily or for forever. So how to find them. So I just wanted to give you a little bit of information on what to do next. There are going to be very few applications for public interest jobs that happen, like, immediately, like tomorrow. We did hear a little bit about the U.S. Attorney's Office and some federal judges. Those are probably going to be the earliest things you're going to see in Simplicity, and they will be likely sort of towards the end of December. And that's still pretty early. So except for some agencies who have said, we'll talk to you on a rolling basis, you can always talk to them. You can always set something up or say you're interested in the summer, and that's what they were tabling for today. But in terms of missing the boat or feeling like you have to now stop studying and start researching all these places tomorrow, don't really worry about doing that. Once you start getting into Simplicity and seeing when we're posting things, you will get a better sense for that. The other thing we'll be circulating in future sessions is a list of all the summer jobs that students have held in the past. And you'll be able to see how many of these agencies are represented in different places. They're not all in Buffalo. And we have a lot of other databases and things that we can point you to that will give you a direction and a timeline for those. General timeline for these, though, tends to be January, February, possibly March. And we do have a career fair at the beginning of February, February 8th, I believe it is, where many of these agencies that you see in the hallway and that are upstate Rochester and Buffalo public interest and government organizations will be attending, and that's because it fits into their timing. So, but certainly feel free to reach out to the individuals that you've heard from or that you see on this website behind you. The other thing is that will lead us into, Christine, is funding. How many of you pay? Okay. I think actually the homeless task force that Diana represented sometimes has funding, but it's pretty rare for the public interest in government sector to pay unless they have some sort of special grant. And so that's the payoff. That's the trade-off. Do I get this fantastic, amazing experience, and then what do I do to pay my rent over the summer? How do I work that out? And so there's a couple of things. One is, a lot of them you don't have to work full-time for. So if you were to talk to them about your hours, and maybe you could work half-time in the summer and get another job that does pay, that isn't so exciting, it doesn't even have to be legal, then that's a lot of times how people sort of pay for the experience. And that's what I did in my summer. I worked for a legal aid clinic, and then I worked at the Olive Garden at night. And it was a tiring summer, but it was extremely fulfilling, and it was one of those times when I felt like a lawyer. So that's one way to do it. The other way to do it is to seek outside funding. So they may not be paying you, but you may find funding from other sources. And usually that's called something called a fellowship. And that's one of those terms everybody throws around. But for the most part, it means that you're getting money from someplace other than the place that you're working for. And one of the sources that a lot of our students get money from is the Buffalo Public Interest Law Program, which is Christine's organization. She's the current president. So I'm going to turn it over to Christine, and she can explain to you how that works.
So before I start going into the Feed Pill stuff, I just wanted to touch on one of the things that Dean Patterson said earlier, which is the Pill Career Fair in New York. For people who are looking for public interest jobs and want to find something early, it's awesome. I got my 1L job that way, and the way it works is you basically just apply to like 10 organizations or whatever that you are interested in, and you find out before you go if you have interviews, and it's like speed dating, and you go down and you have like these speed interviews. But you can also kind of like coach interviews from people who don't show for theirs. If you sit around and like hang out by doors that you're interested in but didn't get picked for. And that's actually how I got my job. So I had never heard of the place I ended up at and just stole someone's interview and got hired that day. So I would really recommend that if you're interested. If you have any questions about it, student-run group that raises money for fellowships for students who end up in unpaid summer internships in public interest. So last year, I think we funded 9 students directly through BPILP, and then we also have like separate named fellowships, which aren't BPILP. They're usually funded by alumni or something like that. They're all on the same application. And the application usually is due sometime around the end of March. So in order to apply for a BPILP fellowship, you need to already have a job, which is why it's so late in the game that we have the application due, because by then most of you will know what you're doing for the summer. The application has a whole bunch of parts, but one of the biggest parts is participation. So if you are interested or think you might be interested in applying for a fellowship, then I would highly suggest you start volunteering now. We have a whole bunch of opportunities coming up. Our big event every year is the auction, which is February 17th this year. It's a Friday. But in addition to volunteering to staff the different events at the auction, we also do letter stuffing to send out for donations. We do basket making for the auction in preparation. We have various tabling events. There's a lot of things you can really do to get involved. And it's really as much or as little as you want to put in, but participation is a really big factor when we get your application. So if you think you're interested, I know a lot of people may want to get paid jobs, but the reality is a lot of 1L jobs do end up being unpaid. So also in terms of jobs that qualify for BPILP, it doesn't have to be just like, you know, it doesn't have to be necessarily one of these kinds of pro bono organizations. It could be a judicial clerkship. It could be the DA office. It could be a lot of different government positions as well. So if you have questions about what might or might not qualify, you can contact me. You can contact Dawn. We all can help you figure out if what you're interested in might qualify for a fellowship. And they range, I think, from $1,000 to $4,000. So, is there anything else I'm missing, Donna?
Another way they can also participate for the gathering donations?
Good call. One of the biggest ways you guys can wrap up hours is by doing an auction route. So, our meeting is tomorrow at 4 p.m. to hand out the routes. It's in 104. Basically, all that entails is you and a friend, or just you, but we usually have people do it in pairs. You sign up for like a stretch of streets, and you just go to different businesses along that street and ask them for donations for the auction. And it's a really easy way to wrap up time. You know, it's fun if you do it with a good group of people, and I highly recommend it. I've done it every year, so... if you're interested in that, that's tomorrow at 4. And
sense or does it sound freaky? Okay, because it sounded freaky to me when I started here. I was all private practice all the time. But like, really simply, you join MeetHelp, you put in hours, you keep track of those hours, and then in March, you can apply for money that you've helped raise to pay for your summer job if it's unpaid. Okay, so basically like paying yourself. They collect like $30,000 over the year. We split it up amongst 10 students for the summer, depending on what public interest job you get. And a big part of whether or not you get that money is how much work you've done for MeetHelp. So last year, I just had a lot of 1Ls be like, I didn't know that's what MeetHelp did, and I can't apply for the summer. So we're trying to give you guys this information early on before you miss out on it.
There's always five people that walk in and tell me they found this great job and it doesn't pay, and it's like 2 days after the MeetHelp money has just been dispersed. So yeah, just be on it. And, you know, as far as timing goes, I know that Christine said you have to have a job first. That's just because your application is partially based on where you're going to be and what your assignment will be. But, you know, timing sometimes gets tight around then. So anything like that, come and talk to us. And, you know, sometimes we've been able to, you know, get you through the issue.
And the other thing, too, is if it's, you know, five people haven't heard from DLE, you know, we can call over there and say, when are you going to know?
What's up, Shelby?
It could be really bad at email, so be patient with us.
Yeah.
And they may not know you have a deadline, so yeah, so we may be able to push them.
So all the time you have a deadline, just make sure that you put it in your email, so that way for any office, we know when we have to respond to you guys, so that way you need to do what you can kind of get moving. So I think Christine and I were talking today about maybe sending an email out to our usual placements to let you guys know when the deadline is, when the students will probably be coming, and you can know by, so they get really helpful.
Absolutely. Last week we previewed a website called PSJD. I just wanted to pull this up one more time to show you. I had logged in and gone through a little bit of the employer database, which you're welcome to do. If everyone's going to need a new login, so you go to Job Seekers, you fill it out, it's just one page, you tell them what school you're from. We pay your fee every year, so it's free for you. So, but I just want to, in the context of this conversation, the other thing is they have a lot of resources in this resource section. So in the tab that says Resource Center, in addition to things about loan forgiveness and career options and paths and applying, there is a section on postgraduate fellowships and funding sources. And there is a summer funding link. So if you wanted to look at more national sources of funding outside of BPILF, or just to look at everything, you can scroll through this list of other sources of funding as well. So just to put in another plug for PSJD. PSJD also links from Simplicity. When you hover over the jobs tab, you have a bunch of other things that show up, and that's one of them. So that's not going to mean anything to you until you get in there. But when you see PSJD in there, I hope you recognize it, or you can just put a favorite on it right now on your device. So, okay. So the elephant in the room through all of this is that in addition to this all being wonderful experience and great for your career and a good thing to do over the summer, is that you actually have to do it. Okay. The Chief Justice of the New York State Court of Appeals has told us that everybody who wants to work in New York State as an attorney and be licensed has to do 50 hours of pro bono. So Dean Saranda is going to tell us how that works.
Yeah. Probably about 90 to 95% of our students take the New York State Bar. Now it's going to be the UBE, or it is the UBE, so it's portable to other states. But in order to be admitted to New York, so it's not really a law school requirement, but it has to be done before you apply for admission. So if you're at upstate, it's right after you take the bar exam, they do character and fitness. If you're down in the New York City or Long Island, it's after you find out you passed the bar. You have to hand in a document that says you've done 50 hours of pro bono. Before you all start in with the same, if you were in New York State and took participation in government, and you start screaming involuntary servitude and all that other stuff, it's about a week and a half of work. We're not talking oppressive stuff here. I did education law, so I saw all those cases where the parents sued the school district saying, you know, volunteerism is not volunteer. That's why we talked about a lot of the opportunities today. You could knock this out your first summer and be done. If you are going to knock it out your first summer, you have to document it. So what we did is we gave you, on the website, current students. So you go to current students, pro bono requirement, documenting your pro bono, instant gratification. You have an affidavit of compliance, takes you right to the court site, shows you the form. You fill out the top. You give it to the person who supervised, one of these folks or whoever. They fill out the bottom. They return it to you. You keep it in a safe place. If you are not capable of handling that, I have a sibling who's not capable of handling those things, then you give it to your spouse or mom or your significant other, and they maintain it for you. And you say, remember I gave you my bar forms? I need them back now. If you go over 50, it doesn't matter. But if you can do it with more than one agency, you need two forms. You can do it piecemeal. Part of Claro is 5 to 7 every Tuesday night. You can do Tuesday nights every week until you hit the 50 hours. And at that point, you'll probably forget and keep going. Our man will say no. He'll put a little ankle bracelet on you, and you'll have to come back. But again, it's very easy. One of the other things I wanted to point out is if you do any kind of employment here that's law-related, or you've done it in the past, there is a law-related employment form. And it's the same thing. You've got to fill it out and give it to the employer. And you'll need to have these before your character and fitness. So it's all right there for you and available for you. Now, one of the ways you can do this, if you are, not this year, but if you say, I can't do anything outside of school, I can only do it inside school, is next year you'll have the opportunity to be able to do an externship and a clerkship. This is the registration materials for next year. Or a practicum or a clinic, and we'll talk more about those in January probably. An externship is where you work for one of these agencies for credit. You do about 135 hours. I've actually made a list now under the information by subject matter. So you can do all sorts of education law, environmental, health, housing. Judicial law is only for 3Ls. You can do one externship and one judicial externship. So you can do the judicial in addition. Law library, if you want to be a law librarian. Municipal law, tax law. Lots of opportunities here. Where is it? I think it's up here. Even sports law, there's some sports law opportunities. So athletics and sports law. So these are available as for credit. You get 3 credits for these, for the externships and for judicial clerkship. A practicum is a combination of classroom work and service work. And in the spring, there's criminal law. And Shelley talked about the pro se practicum where you provide service in family court or in federal court. There's a new pro se practicum in Rochester. So if you're a Rochester commuter, you could do it in Rochester. There's also a lot of, you can do an externship in Rochester. And then the last thing is a clinic. Clinics are in in-house, and you apply for them, and these are the clinics that we currently have in-house. These are all opportunities that you can do next year. They all count for your pro bono and also for your experiential, which is a requirement you'll see as upper class. And they take care of that. So this is a quick step. You can either do it as part of your academic program. You can knock it out this summer. Make sure you document it. If you have any questions, you can come and find me. I'm up in 614. I think I'm also on the page with the pro bono. So, yep, you can contact me right there if you have any questions. Any questions now? Nope. One other thing that I didn't talk about, pro bono scholars. Actually, we have two of them here. Bookending. Shelby, you were one, weren't you? No, you weren't? Okay, I thought you were one. All right, sorry, I thought you were one. You can pretend now, that's okay. Christine McCullough is a pro bono scholar in your third year in the spring semester. It's a program, another program from Chief Judge Lippman. He's the judge that just stepped down, where you can take the bar early in February before you graduate. It's the only way you can take the bar before you graduate. And then once you finish taking the bar in February, from March through the end of what would have been finals, you work full-time for a legal services agency. And so this year we have six pro bono scholars who will be taking the bar in February and working full-time in spring. Five will be here in Buffalo and one will be in Rochester. And there's a class associated with that. So that's another opportunity that lies out there if you want to take it early. So.
Thank you. Mm-hmm. The pro bono requirement can get a little bit technical when you actually get in the weeds of it. So if you find yourself wondering if what you've done qualifies or when you should get your form, Dean's Rand is a really great resource on pretty much all things bar-related. So if you have any questions about the bar exam in any way or any of these credits, she also runs the externship program as well. So externships, I'll just put a plug in for the externships, practica, and clinics. These are all great experiences, and sometimes you feel like you wish you had more summers to spend on them, or you had more time to try out new things. And I really highly recommend opportunities during the year, like the externships and practica and clinics, because it's one more way to squeeze in another diverse experience without having to find summertime to do it. Plus, it'll reduce your other class requirements, so it will actually make your exam period a little bit nicer.
No exam.
Very little actual homework. So it's actually a great way to get credit for hands-on work as well. So I highly recommend those from a career standpoint. And they're very well run. And Donsky can see work in that group as well. So, any parting thoughts about these kinds of jobs, about what you're doing now?